I'm going to also to talk about M31. I'm going to talk a little bit about X-ray sources in general, and I'll go to the super soft X-ray sources that interest us as possible progenitors of type 1a supernovae. So the review of the brief history of M31 X-ray studies that I'll give has to be very quick, and I'll probably neglect some important results. But everything has developed very quickly in the last 15 or 16 years. The first satellite that was able to give important results for the X-ray populations of external galaxies was Einstein. And in 1991, there is a very important paper by Trinchieri and Fabiano that started this type of studies, with the detection of 108 sources in the Einstein pointing. At the same time, ROSAT was doing a survey of M31, but it takes years to analyze all these results completely. And the work is still in progress for all the results we have for XMM and Chandra nowadays. So you see that with ROSAT, there was a loss of spatial resolution because, well, the PSPC did have very little spatial resolution. The error boxes can be as large as 30 arc seconds. But there was a follow-up with the other instrument, the HRI, that had better spatial error box of about maybe 8 arc seconds or so in the best cases. And so the positions are still less precise than the ones of Einstein. But on the other hand, it went deeper. It covered much more of the galaxy. It covered more, it extended beyond, I have some pictures here, so it extended beyond the 25 magnitude isophotes in M31. And this is the spatial distribution that was observed. So now, a few other things. I'll go back to the previous slide. Here there is a little census of the type of sources that were detected. The upper limits are still relatively high for the X-ray luminosity, only of 10 to 36 Hz per second. But still, with ROSAT already in the Super et al. Paper of 1997, we have almost 400 sources. We had at that time only 70 supernova remnants. With the modern studies, I think the number has gone up quite a bit. And only 43 of those 400 were foreground stars. And the estimate is that not more than 20% of foreground sources can be background stars. So this is in great contrast to other local group galaxies with very low gas content that are very useful for studies of super soft X-ray sources. But when we look towards them, like the dwarf ellipticals, the dwarf spheroidals, we do see mainly background sources. In the regular, small irregulars. So we see lots of AGNs, and only about 20% of all the sources may belong to the galaxy. Here, only 20% of all the sources may be background AGNs, and not more than 20% foreground stars. So 60% of these sources, and today the number is getting close to 1,000 sources, are actually X-ray sources belonging to the galaxy. So that's because M31... First of all, it has more gas content, so it's less transparent, and we see less AGNs, but also it has a large stellar mass and luminous mass, almost twice the mass of our own galaxy. So it is very useful for this type of studies. And here you see the beautiful image that was made with the first XMM pointings by Wolfgang Pitsch. We are now, this radius is 30 arc minutes, so we are going. We are covering. They covered a much less smaller area than the ROSAT pointings. The ROSAT pointings covered about 6 square degrees. This is much less, as you can see. However, I think it's about 1.5 square degree. However, with XMM and also with Chandra, as I'll tell you in a minute, the core, the central region, was imaged several times, looking for variability and with some deep pointings. Now, the X-ray luminosity in the different pointings goes down sometimes even to 10 to 34. So we still cannot detect quiescent cataclysmic variables, quiescent low mass X-ray binaries, but for bursting sources, we're quite complete. One regret I have is that now there are no more institutional, so to speak, pointings of M31 in X-rays. Every pointing has to be approved by the panel review, and there are no long exposures that have been approved. I think we could do better. We could do beyond this limit, for instance, but it's very hard to get the time. This is an example of how we need really Chandra to study the innermost two Earth minutes. There are about 17% or about 20% of the stellar population, and close to that percentage of X-ray sources concentration in that very, very inner region. So this is up with ACES, I think, of this very inner region here. So XMM-Newton cannot really resolve stars in that very important part of the galaxy where many violent phenomena could happen. These were, instead, the ACES pointings, the three main regions that were observed. And Roseanne has a long paper on supersoft sources in those pointings. The center was also studied with VHRC, which has a radius, which is a field of view, which is comparable to epic PN of about 30 arc minutes. In 17 pointings, in the first 2.5 years, there is a recent paper by Williams et al. They found 166 objects only in those inner 30 arc minutes, of which 25% were variables. Indeed, they managed to probably identify two optical transients. They have also a variable counterpart. There were many supernova remnants. Some of them are resolved with Chandra. They're specially resolved. One of them is extremely soft. It's very young. It's SN in the center of M31. So very recent supernova remnants could mimic supersoft X-ray binaries. The most luminous X-ray binary is in a globular cluster. There's a paper of Trudeau-Lubov et al. On that. And as you see, the northern disk was also studied quite a bit, and only out of 19 likely, not sure, not certain, but likely counterparts, only 5 seem to be foreground stars. Now, let's go to what we want to talk about. I want to talk about mainly, and it's the super soft X-ray sources. This is a general classification. It's just a very, a very phenomenological classification, and it could include all sorts of other objects. And also the way these supersoft sources are selected is instrument-dependent, observer-dependent, so one really needs to take care when doing statistics. Now, a large part, however, of these supersoft sources are thought to be single degenerate systems in a white dwarf accreting and burning hydrogen in a shell at a very high rate, the high rate that we expect for type 1a supernova progenitors. So they're interesting regardless of the fate of a particular system because they give us a glimpse into that physics Sumner was talking about. Of course, we have lots of classical novae. We do know that classical novae are hydrogen burning white dwarf, and I'll go back to that describing my own study and the study of Peach et al. On the M31 novae supersoft sources. About more than 20% seems to be transient. I think at this point we don't have enough sensitivity to make sure that there are really more transient sources among supersoft X-ray sources. Now, what we would really like to do, M31 is still close enough, at 780 parsecs, that with modern telescopes we could really determine the counterparts at other wavelengths and study them optically and try to determine something about the parameters of the system and give an estimate of white dwarf masses. Now, I'll skip probably the next, because you've seen it enough today and yesterday, but you've seen how one main thing I wanted to show you is this plot where you see actually a thermonuclear flash of a supersoft source in X-rays. This was in the LMC, RX0547.8-69454. The LMC was monitored optically at that time. There was no optical burst at all, only X-rays, and it's really very, very soft. So we think that was a thermonuclear flash. It's different from the kind of variability that we have in CAL-83. And so these flashes seem to really occur. There are other examples of that. You know that the two main parameters, you've heard enough about it, but you know that the two main parameters are the mass accretion rate and the mass of the white dwarf, and they determine whether mass is ejected from the system through a very, very fast stellar wind or not. So we're particularly interested in this regime, in the M dot versus mass of the white dwarf plot, the steady EUV sources, but there may be a limit cycle like in the Van den Heuvel et al. Models of 1992, which these are, by the way, very old plots from Fujimoto 82. The parameters have changed, I mean, the actual details may be different, but they're plots that everybody likes to show because they're very representative of what happens in the parameter space. So we may have recurrent UV source, we may have a limit cycle in which only 10% of the life of the system is spent in this state, but still have stable hydrogen burning and still be accreting towards burning all the material that is accreted at a very fast rate as it comes in, and be able to go towards the chondrosacral mass. Some facts of life about supersoft X-ray sources in general. The sad fact that no masses have been determined directly. It is noted that even resembles slightly what we have seen with the previous studies of white dwarf distributions, of the spectra that Paula showed us for cataclysmic variables that are not where the white dwarf is not so hot. So we have some estimates, and we even have estimates from a handful of grating spectra that are mainly grating spectra of Novae. But let me tell you that the two estimates based on white dwarf fits and other considerations, but mainly where we really see the white dwarf, are for a recurrent nova. We've already heard that, unfortunately, we do not expect to have enough number to justify all the statistics of type 1a supernovae as coming from recurrent novae. So RSO Fuchi, very recently, seems to have a very massive white dwarf above 1.25 solar masses, probably around 135 solar masses. And CAL83 also seems to has a good grading spectrum. We can evaluate the mass of the white dwarf. There is the Lanz et al. Paper quoted by Sumner. But these are all indirect proofs, actually. There is no way to really determine the white dwarf mass or even fitting a spectrum in these two cases proves to be difficult. There are always winds also in these sources. And for some of the grading spectra, especially for CAL87 and MR Veil, you do see just emission spectrum of a wind. In Armer Veil, a galactic source that was classified as supersoft, we believe probably there is a neutron star. And the jury is still out for CAL87, where the white dwarf is hidden. But we do think there is a hot white dwarf there. Only no estimate possible. So there are also other estimates of white dwarf masses in these systems based on radial velocity, but they show a low white dwarf mass of about 0.6 solar systems. So we haven't really seen this steady burning without mass ejection white dwarfs that we would like to see. This is the extinction from the paper of Saparekov based on the on-wing maps. You can see how low the extinction is in the real core, because of the low gas content. And then we have the ring of fire. We have an area here, number 3, where you actually have too much extinction to be able to see supersoft X-ray sources at all. So this is clearly seen when you examine the images of the SMC, where there are areas of very low gas content of dwarf ellipticals and dwarf spheroidals. The sources you tend to see, they are much softer. So the statistics are not complete by just using M31. Because we would lose all the low temperature system, actually. Now, in M31, about 61 were observed with ROSET, and after the first few years of M31, pointies with 100 XMM. There have been other pointies, just a handful of more sources discovered, mainly Novae. Probably we can estimate that if we take the whole area of M31 at a given time, we do have about 100 sources, but 30% of these are classical Novae, with some black hole transients probably included by mistakes, because we only have H-alpha images, and black hole transients have a strong H-alpha without comparing them with the level of the continuum, having red images before and after with images in the R filter. We cannot weed out the black hole transients. Okay, we do find some hard X-ray sources. I did find two. Was found by Peach. It doesn't. I do think it is a probably black hole transient. One was found by me. We do find these hardish sources in the place of some two recurrent novae, and I do think those two recurrent novae are probably black hole transients. So it may be also a way to use these H-alpha surveys compared to optical, to X-ray images, and to find some new black hole transients, not just Novae. Now, only 20% of the super soft sources in the repeated images are clearly variable. We don't know about the others. There are two sources which I think are very interesting because they may be almost, they're probably exceeding the Eddington luminosity, even with an atmospheric fit. These are, well, they're not, probably not very interesting to most of you, but they are, I wanted to show them because this system, which is very luminous, R212 in the Chandra catalogs and Lausanne et al.'s papers, it is variable. These are XMM and Chandra count rates normalized to each other. But this one, R38, which is farther away from the core but still pretty central, it varies by even two orders of magnitude. So there are all sorts of speculations. What are these? Are these two new systems like KALETI3 and KALETI7? In the Williams et al. Papers on transients, they speculate a strange model of neutron star cooling and accreting for this source. I don't think that works. They concluded it's probably main Hercules systems. But we have Wien images where we don't find any optical counterpart with blue with in B up to 23.5 magnitudes. So it's very unlikely. It may be really an M31. This one has some possible red counterparts. There is a work by Rosanne with some students, and we're also collaborating on that using HST images, and you do find a possible red counterpart there, but it may be a symbiotic, or it may really be a foreground star, but that's more relatively unlikely. Let me show you why we're particularly interested in some gaiotics. Recently, two SMC sources have been super soft X-ray sources have been shown to burn hydrogen steadily with constant or even increasing temperature, and one of them is a 450,000 degrees temperature at SMC3, Sumner was talking about. And these two sources are probably accreting stably. They are symbiotics. They're not necessarily good candidates for type 1a supernova progenitors, but they're very interesting. And so if we can get rid of the hydrogen, then we have some candidates. If not, I don't know. With symbiotics, it's more difficult. In the search for novae, there are now two papers by Wolfgang Pitsch et al. In which they do search for novae very extensively in M31. The way they do it, I have some criticism because the way they do it, the way they calculate the percentage of super soft sources among novae is by selecting very soft sources. And I think, for instance, they would miss a system like Arisofyuki because it's too hot, too hard even for their selection criteria. And the most massive white dwarfs would be lost with these selection criteria. On the other hand, when they look for the X-ray counterparts, they even look for hard sources. So they're not really trying to weed out the black hole transients or another can be hardly detected for a short time with their hard X-ray luminosity after the outburst from the shell because they're not luminous enough at the distance of M31, not for long enough. So there's not much time to talk about it, but I would only want to show you some things in our search for optical and UV counterparts. This is a possible counterpart. Of course, this was a little disappointing because it's a system which we didn't find any orbital variability. These are ROSA sources. The error bar was very large. It was first thought to be associated with this beautiful nebula, which is associated with the Wolf-Rayet star. But instead, the X-ray source seems to be this clearly strong U object with strong flux that is seen also in the galaxy image. Now, galaxy is really precious. There is a paper by Nesson et al. That I don't have time to talk about, but we really can distinguish the sources outside the central region with galaxy, and we find about 50% coincidence of X-ray sources with strong ultraviolet imaging, a strong ultraviolet source in the galaxy imaging. Now, the last thing I want to tell you is the use of HST archives for M31 and this use of color magnitude diagrams. This is from a poster at the AAS of Scarlett Scholes that she has done with Rosanne and the CFA group. And you can see here, well, I don't have time to get into this, but these core sources, they seem to be associated with all populations in general. I don't have much time to get into this, but this is also interesting because it has many implications for the delay time of the single degenerate model if these are type 1a supernova progenitors. So these are my conclusions. Possible important components are symbiotic. We hope to be able to verify it by identifying some in M31. We don't have definite data yet. One thing I didn't talk about is that LMC sources seem to be more transient and have shorter duty cycles than the M31 sources. I don't know why. But there is a lot of selection effect in the comparison with other galaxies because of the stellar content. So other conclusions are premature. So that would be it.
Thank you very much.
You had this number of 10% of the novae could be black hole transients.
Well, a few percent, but I get to the conclusion even up to 10%.
But where does that come from? I mean, in our galaxy, certainly the number of black hole transients among novae is 1% or less.
You have about 10 out of, in a period of time of about, in which about 100 novae exploded, so it's close to 10% even in our galaxy, right? How many galactic novae do we have altogether? We have about 300, right? They didn't all explode when there was X-ray monitoring. So many of them we have missed. Let's say we have 10 sources that are possibly associated with black holes, so it's about 10%. That's a rough estimate.
The galactic X-ray transients are optically faint, generally? Sorry.
The galactic X-ray transients, yeah, but what do you mean exactly? You mean the black hole transients we were talking about? We are going to confuse them, yeah. I mean, that's my opinion, at least. They're as bright as novae. Many of them have a jump of 8 magnitude. They weren't always monitored optically right away.
Yeah, I was also going to comment that maybe some of the things we think are novae in M31 are not really novae. Among the things that have been identified in recent work, because we don't really have a decline curve for many of them, so it's hard to know exactly what they are. But time will tell. That will all be worked out, certainly when we get to the era of pan-stars, as Alan was saying before.
So I didn't quite understand what you were saying about the GALAX association with X-ray sources in M31. Were you asserting that specific populations were associated with GALAX X-ray sources? And
we've got, for sources to resolve sources near the core of M31. So once you go, 15 minutes outside the core, 15 arc minutes, 20 arc minutes, you can resolve point sources with galaxies in M31. I think you would agree with that. Now, there is a clear association of about, out of those 60 novae, 60 super soft X-ray sources that I mentioned, and nowadays possibly 70, you have, these 20, 25 outside that region. And half of them have a strong GALAX source in the error box. So they're probably, to be like a very strong UV emitter. Sorry, I didn't. Thank you. Yes.
You mentioned something like 100 supersofts in M31, or is that an extrapolation of them?
There's close to 70 that have been observed up to now. But when you take the selection effects and you consider that you didn't observe all the galaxies at once, and some of them are transient, and you correct for the number of transients and for the region that was observed, you come up with a number of the order of 100.
100 observable, but then you have the interstellar gas and all those things.
Right.
And if you would correct for that, if you would extrapolate from that, what would be the real number? Could it be 1,000?
Yeah, it's difficult. difficult to, I think it has to do to be done empirically by looking at galaxies with low gas content. So that's what we're now trying to do.
Okay. Okay. Because yeah, the real number, of course, is the thing we want to know.
Right.
Yeah, but this is fantastic. And so thanks very much for this talk. Other questions? No more other questions, then let's thank Marina again.